devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande Hari Om. Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 12, Text 17. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tasman Namna Vishnurata Iti Loke Bhavishyati Na Sandeho Mahabhaga Mahabhagavato Mahan Tasman Namna Vishnurata Iti Loke Bhavishyati Nasandeho Mahabhaga Mahabhagavato Mahan Tasman Namna Vishnurata Iti Loke Bhavishyati Nasandeho Mahabhaga Mahabhagavato Mahan. Please chant. Nasadeo Mahabhaga. Vishnurata Iti Loke Bhavishyati Nasandeho Mahabhaga Nasandeho Mahabhaga Mahabhagavato Mahan Tasman Namna Vishnurata Iti Loke Bhavishyati Ladies, Tasmana Vishnurata, Loke Bhavishyati,
Thank you.
Tasmat, therefore, namna, by the name, Vishnurata, protected by Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, iti, thus, loke, in all the planets, bhavishyati, shall become well known. Na, no. Sandeha, doubts. Mahabhag, most fortunate. Mahabhagavata, the first class devotee of the Lord. Mahan, qualified by all good qualities. Translation and purport. For this reason, the child will be well known in the world as one who is protected by the personality of Godhead. Oh, most fortunate one, there is no doubt that this child will become a first-class devotee and will be qualified with all good qualities. The Lord gives protection to all living beings because He's their supreme leader. The Vedic hymns confirm that the Lord is the supreme person amongst all personalities. The difference between the two living beings is that the one, the personality of Godhead, provides for all other living beings. And by knowing Him, one can achieve eternal peace. Kataya Upanishad. Such protection is given by His different potencies to different grades of living beings. But as far as His unalloyed devotees are concerned, He gives the protection personally. Therefore, Maharaj Prickett is protected from the very beginning of His appearance in the womb of His mother, and because He is especially given protection by the Lord, the indication must be concluded that the child would be a first-grade devotee of the Lord with all good qualities. There are three grades of devotees, namely the Mahabhagavat, Madhyama Adhikari, and the Kanishta Adhikari, those who go to the temples of the Lord and offer worshipful respect to the deity without sufficient knowledge in the theological science and therefore without any respect for the devotees of the Lord are called materialistic devotees or Kanishta Adhikari, the third grade devotees. Secondly, the devotees who have developed a mentality of genuine service to the Lord and who thus make friendships only with similar devotees show favor to the neophytes and avoid the atheists are called the second grade devotees. But those who see everything in the Lord or everything of the Lord and also see in everything an eternal relation of the Lord, so that there is nothing within their purview of sight except the Lord, are called the Mahabhagavats, or the first grade devotees of the Lord. Such first grade devotees of the Lord are perfect in all respects. A devotee who may be in any of these categories is automatically qualified by all good qualities, and thus a Mahabhagavat devotee like Maharaj Prickett is certainly perfect in all respects. And because Maharaj Prickett took his birth in the family of Maharaj Yudhisthira, he's addressed herein as the Mahabhagavat, or the greatest of the fortunates. the family in which a Mahabhagavat takes his birth is fortunate because due to the birth of a first grade devotee, the members of the family, past, present, and future, up to 100 generations, become liberated by the grace of the Lord. Out of respect for his beloved devotee. Therefore, the highest benefit is done to one's family simply by becoming an unalloyed devotee of the Lord. Tasman namna Vishnurata iti loke bhavishyati na sandeho mahabhagavato mahan. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nita Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deva Gauravani Pacharine Nirvasesha Sumnivari Pastililishtani. Abide, don't talk out loud. Whisper. Okay? So here the name Vishnurata means protected by Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. I looked in the database to find out how often the word or the name Vishnurata appears in the Bhagavatam, and I found it appears 5 times. That means that Srila Vyasadeva wrote this name, Vishnurata, for Parikit, 5 times in several different cantos when he was describing Parikit. As we are hearing, the name was given to the Lord, to Parikit, very early in his life. He was still in the womb when he was saved by the Lord. In this modern day, we would think of a child in the womb who's endangered, like Parikit was. We would think of it as an abortion. The child's life would be ended in the womb. So something like that was taking place. But the Lord saved him, and this name, Vishnurata, stayed with Parikit until the end of his days. When he met Shukadev Goswami, Vyasadev wrote, Vishnurata met Shukadev and paid his obeisances, and like that. In other cantos, first canto, second canto, 8th canto, 10th canto, 12th canto, Vishnurata, he's called. So we're actually looking at a very brief section of this chapter. There are 2 verses here, just in this section, in which Brahmins are speaking to Maharaj Yudhisthira about Parikit. And I found that in yesterday's verse, the word Rata also appears, just as it does in today's verse. Today it appears as Vishnurata. Yesterday's verse, text 16, says, Daivena pratiga tena shukle, on, and then it comes to the word rato or rata. That means restored or saved. Restored. Actually, the embryo was destroyed by the weapon, and Lord Vishnu restored the body so that Parikit could be born. Why did he do that? The Brahmins say it's because he was a pure descendant of the Puru dynasty. So pure means pure devotee. And he was actually the only surviving male descendant after the Great War. So the line of the Puru dynasty was resting on Parikshit, and Krishna wanted that this line of kings continue. So he's called Prabhavishnu in the previous verse. That means he's all-powerful, Prabhavishnu. And he decided, I will save Parikshit from this weapon. I'll counteract the effect of the weapon. Actually, the weapon is also described as all-powerful, in a sense, because there was nothing material, no other means materially, to stop this weapon. It had so much power that it could penetrate precisely into the target of the embryo in the womb. But who's more powerful? Lord Vishnu. He's all-pervading. So he's beyond material powers. His power excels any material force. So he counteracted the weapon's effect. And he wanted to do that so that Parikshit could represent him and rule the world for spiritual progress, for the sake of the spiritual progress of people. That includes living peacefully, that includes prosperity. People want to live with some feelings of peace and happiness and prosperity, and the Lord is not against that. So he also wants the people to make spiritual progress. And the king is the most ideal person to direct people in making spiritual progress if he's trained. This morning we heard a short reading from the Bhagavatam, and the king is not just all, you know, happiness and, you know, I feel good, I hope you feel good. He's described as the person who cuts off the hands of the thief. The king administers this with his sword, and the thieves become terrified. I won't do it, I won't commit these crimes because the king is so fierce. So he has a very strict side also. Krishna speaks about this in the Bhagavad Gita. He describes how the yoga, the imperishable yoga of Bhagavad Gita, comes down to different rulers, starting with Vivasvan. He says, Vivasvan and Manu and Ikshvaku, they heard this from me long, long time ago. And he uses the famous words, evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayu vidu. The saintly kings understood this as it was coming down one after the other, from one king to the other, but originally from Krishna to Vivasvan. And Arjuna is next. So in the next verse, Krishna says to Arjuna, you're my devotee and friend, and you can understand this. Therefore, bhakto sime saka cheti rahasyam hyetad uttamam. Krishna says, you've lovingly devoted your life to me, Arjuna, and you've become my friend. So you're able to understand this transcendental nature of mine. I'll disclose to you in the Bhagavad Gita. You'll understand. So this is the first time in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna uses the word bhakta. Bhakta sime saka. Cheti saka means friend. And rahasya means, and uttamam, rahasyam uttamam means secret or confidential. This is the secret of the Bhagavad Gita, that you can understand Krishna if you become his bhakta, become devoted to him. And like Arjuna, maybe you develop a friendship or some other relationship. the non-devotees can't understand. So it's called confidential. It's reserved for the devotees. So bhakta is an important word, and it appears in the fourth chapter, and then 15 more times in Bhagavad Gita. And bhakti, the word bhakti appears in the Bhagavad Gita. Anyone want to guess? No? Guesses? A lot. Almost the same number of times. Bhakta, 15 times. Bhakti, 14 times. Huh? Once I asked Vaisasika, where's the first place in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says bhakti? And you know, Vaisasika knows the Bhagavad Gita by heart. So he started to scan his memory. He couldn't quite get it, so I said, it's in chapter 7. And so he started reciting chapter 7. And he came to the verse, it's number 17, 717. First time bhakti is mentioned. So the word bhakta means one who's loved by the Lord. So Krishna loves his devotee. That's mentioned in today's purport. Krishna gives protection to Parikit because Parikit is dear to the Lord. He's an unalloyed devotee. He had such special standing that he's called Mahabhagavat. First class devotee. And so the Brahmins say, we have no doubt at all that this person will become, this newborn child will become first-class devotee and have all good qualities to perfection. He'll demonstrate all the good qualities of a devotee to perfection. The rest of us, we're in the second class or the third class of devotees. Still, Prabhupada said, we all have these qualities. If we're devotees, we all have these good qualities to some extent. And one of the attributes of this being a Mahabhagavat, a first-class devotee, is that you'll deliver 100 generations of your family, past, present, and future. I found a statement by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that says that this is particular to the first-class Mahabhagavat devotee, 100 generations, and he says the second-class devotee, Madhyama Adhikari, he'll deliver 14 generations. And the Kanishta Adhikari, third-class devotee, will deliver 3 generations of his family. Prabhupada mentions a few qualities here of the Mahabhagavat, how he sees everything in relation to the Lord. And he's self-satisfied, satisfied by the self. Because he realizes he's an eternal servitor of the Lord. This is his self-realization. He identifies himself as a servitor of the Lord eternally. Arjuna asks Krishna in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, what are the characteristics of someone who is like this, who is self-realized and who always sees you? And Arjuna's question goes like this, it's verse 254. He asks Krishna, what's the description of one established in profound knowledge? Was established in perfect meditation. How would one established in thought speak? How would he sit? How would he move about? So he uses this word established 3 times. Established in knowledge, established in thought, established in meditation. Prabhupada says that we have to develop our power of thinking, our thought process, in the association of pure devotees. The pure devotees will teach us how to think, how to be established in thought, and in perfect meditation and profound knowledge. The knowledge is profound, you know. Okay, I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul. It's profound knowledge. But to be established in that so that we don't change our opinion in the course of the day, and we are able to act in that knowledge. Be established in that knowledge means to act perfectly. Not committing offenses, for example. So Krishna answers Arjuna's question. He says, Prajahati yada kaman sarvaparta manogatan atmane eva manatushta stita prajnastaduchite. He says, a person who's established in meditation, knowledge, and thought, he gives up all selfish desires arising from the mind. So he's not influenced by his mundane mind. Mind is the reservoir of desires. Mind is the reservoir of other qualities. Greed, anger, envy, illusion. The mind is terrible. So a devotee doesn't want to be controlled by his mind at all. And so he gives up. He relinquishes these desires that come from the mind. And he's satisfied with the self, by the self. Thinking, I'm a servant of Krishna. Then he's established in profound knowledge, Krishna says. And today's purport tells us what the result of that is, that there's a famous verse that Prabhupada refers to, which says that the devotees develop all good qualities. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvaigunas tatras samastate sura harababhaktasya kutom mahadguna manore manoratenasati davato bahi. So here the mind is mentioned again, and it's called the chariot of the mind. You've seen that picture in the Bhagavad Gita, the spirit souls riding on the chariot. The intelligence and the mind are trying to control the senses. And the chariot is running in Krishna's external energy. So therefore this verse says that someone who is riding on the material energy in Maya, he has no good qualities. He's devoid of the good qualities. But a devotee who has no other possessions, no other motives except service to the personality of Godhead, he develops all the good qualities that are present in the demigods. So what are those qualities? That, like, religion is one, knowledge is one, renunciation is another. But these qualities don't develop in a yogi who's just a mystic, for example. Someone might develop mystic powers. These qualities don't develop in someone who's an exemplary householder who has no devotion for Krishna. One can do his best job or her best job as a father or mother or householder, be honest, but the good qualities really develop when one is a devotee. One becomes very well behaved, he becomes tolerant and peaceful and grave, he becomes serious about the purpose of life. He's respectful to everyone. He works for everyone's benefit. He doesn't cheat or lie. He's not duplicitous. He doesn't perform malicious activities. So Prabhupada encouraged the devotees, even from the very beginning in New York City. I heard a lecture he gave at 26 Second Avenue. And he says the devotee develops all these good qualities. And then he reminds the devotees of a list that he wrote for them. He listed the 26 qualities on a sheet of paper. And he during the lecture, he asks the devotees who are there, maybe just 10 devotees, 20 devotees, not so many. He said, "Where is that list?" You can hear this on the tape. And somebody says, "It's in the drawer, in the drawer." So Prabhupada says, "Get it out." So somebody gets the list out. And calling attention to this list of the 26 qualities devotee, he says, so important for a devotee to develop these good qualities. He's equal to everyone. He doesn't make anybody his enemy. He's truthful. He's kind. Doesn't find fault. He's mild. Always clean. He's without possessions. Peaceful. He's meek and humble. No material desires, controls his senses, doesn't eat more than required. He's not influenced by Maya. He offers respects to all, doesn't desire respect, and he's merciful, friendly, poetic, expert, and silent. Any questions? Ananda?
So first I have a small comment and a question. Is that okay? Well, thank you for the very nice class. You were reading about the 26 qualities, good qualities of a devotee. And one of them is to be truthful and non-duplicit. And I've noticed, like, on book distribution, for example, some devotees have this conception that they have to tell little fibs and little lies so the people will be more willing to take a book and give a donation. But I've spoken to other senior book distributors that have this mentality of not 100% non-duplicity, that you're just 100% honest with the people, and any word that comes out of your mouth is completely true. And this, I've found, by applying this, is actually more effective because the people can see that you're trying to be genuine and that you're a real person, and they're attracted to that. So that was one comment.
Can I just comment on that? I was editing, you know, these stories for Vijay's book of Sankirtan stories, and Prabhupada made a kind of joke once. He said in the Bhakti Siddhanta Gaudiya Math, there was one distributor of literature who was telling people, just to make a big impression in the person's mind, "My spiritual master lived in the forest and ate nothing but tulsi leaves for 10 years. It wasn't true, but Prabhupada said he was, to get the point, you know, to make the person get the point, that he should read what this person has written. Prabhupada said he said that.
And my question was, so you were saying that someone who's controlled by the material energy has no good qualities.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's kind of hard to see because,
yes,
I mean, so many people seem like they have wonderful qualities, but they're not yet devotees.
Yeah. Right. Somebody might be honest, and he's an atheist, but he thinks that honesty is important, but he's an atheist. So he's in Maya, but he seems to have a good quality. But this verse, Yasyasti Bhagavati, says no, he doesn't, because what's the result of his honesty? He's just going to end up in Maya. He's going to take birth again. He's not going to reach the goal of human life. So he's actually blind to the goal of human life, and therefore we can't say he has. So it's like that. Somebody might be a good parent, you know, really trying to do good for the kids. But if it's all in the bodily concept of life, then the so-called good is redefined according to the body and the mind. The mind will manufacture so many ideas of what's good. And people will argue, yeah, it's better to be good than to be passionate or ignorant, you know. I mean, someone who has an idea of the good is certainly better than someone who's just passionate or ignorant. That's okay. You know, there's some scope for giving some people some credit for trying to be good. You know, people have a desire. I want to be good. So that's okay. But ultimately, it's weighed by this standard of whether the person succeeds in achieving the goal of life, which is to stop repeated birth and death. And he has to therefore know who he is. For that, he has to go into the process of transcendental yoga and hear about Krishna's theology. Prabhupada mentions in the purport that, you know, the Kanishtha Adhikari may not even be so well acquainted with the transcendental theology. The Kanishtha Adhikari may just go to the temple and have some faith in the deity, but not have sufficient knowledge in the theological science, and therefore he'll lack respect for the devotees of the Lord. But the second class devotee respects the devotees of the Lord and associates with them. So there's different levels. Is that okay? Yes. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. I have a question about the third class devotee. Third class devotee. How can he still going to Godhead and take 14 generations? That's what you say? Three generations.
Third class is three generations.
Yes.
Second class is 14.
Yeah, I'm asking about the third class. How's possible?
Third class delivers three generations of his family. Because devotional service is so wonderful.
So that means if I die in third class, if I die, I'd leave the body and be in a Kanishtha Adhikari, are we still going Godhead?
You will still?
Yes.
Huh? No. You may not go back to Godhead immediately. You may still have to go through further progress. You're going to take birth either in a nice family of devotees in your next life. Many devotees in ISKCON, you know, leave their body, and then we say, you know, did this person go back to Godhead? There's also a description by Prabhupada that the devotee goes to the place in the material universe where Krishna is performing his pastimes. He joins Krishna within the material creation somewhere where Krishna is performing pastimes before he goes back to the spiritual world. So there's different steps up. I'll just send Micah's over there and then we'll come back.
Could you explain the meaning of liberation, what it's meant for the liberation of the families? What does that mean?
At the time of death? Liberation at the time of death?
Three generations
of the family. I think that means that the family gets the opportunity to get connected to the process that is liberating. So he'll be liberated in the sense that he'll make progress and pick it up in his next life, or if he's advanced already, like, you know, Yudhisthira was already advanced. Yudhisthira didn't need so much help. But he's described as, you're the most fortunate because his parikit will deliver 100 generations. How much help did Yudhisthira need? Not so much. But these things, you know, the process of liberation, it's in the hands of authorities who weigh the karma of the living entities and decide on their next stage of life and so on. So we can't calculate that all so well. It's like the telephone company can send us the bill and they know what we have to pay for.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a nice presentation. I was just wondering why you glossed Krishna's answer to Arjuna in the second chapter the way you did. You glossed it as, when you give up selfish desires, but that's not what exactly Krishna says. Krishna says, Prajahati Yadakaman, Sarvan Partha Manogata. When you give up desires for sense gratification that arise from mental concoction only. Specifically, you said, sense gratification. When you give up desires for sense gratification which arise from mental, and this is related to Anandakirtan's point about being good, and your answer was actually right on point, but the point is these people are on the platform of sense gratification. It gives them, makes them feel good to find a cat or a dog, a stray cat or a dog, a forever home. But then they go to the supermarket and buy tins of cat food or dog food that have dead cows in it. So that's misplaced sentiment. Devotees are kind to animals, not out of misplaced sentiment, because they know each and every living being is a spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. That's why they're doing it. So they're not going to kill one living being to feed another living being. They're not going to do that consciously. So this is what we have to understand, because sometimes in our own communities, this kind of sentiment creeps in. Oh, there's a stray cat or a stray dog. I have to take him in. Subhas, I know you don't like animals in the apartments, but I have to have a cat or a dog. I can't leave this cat on the street. But then they will go and feed the cat food, which has dead animals in it. So who's going to get that karma? Not the cat. Animals don't get karma. You're going to get that karma for feeding this animal the flesh of other animals. So this is what it's meant by good qualities are not there in those who are not devotees, because they're doing things sentimentally. It makes me feel good to give a cat or a dog a forever home and feed them the flesh of other animals. But that's not how devotees think. Devotees are thinking that every living being has a right to exist on Krishna's maintenance. And Krishna has arranged maintenance for every animal separately.
Yeah, that's,
and you don't have to interfere in the process.
That's the verse that Prabhupada first referred to in the purport. Eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. Krishna fulfills the desires of everyone. So Krishna is willing to, you know, give you another body and help you fulfill your desires. Everyone is protected by Krishna, maintained by Krishna. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.